Okay, we're recording. Okay, welcome. I want to acknowledge our sponsors again, Jake and Karen Abelevitz, for sponsoring our lunch and our learning. And in the zchus of our enjoying the delicious lunch and the merit of the Talmud Torah, there should be an Eloi Nishmas, Jake's parents, Eliyahu ben Avraham, Eliyahu ben Abba, and Leah bas Avram. Okay, we are heading into Vayikra. We're actually in Vayikra already, and we're sort of getting deep into it. And I'd like to focus on a very, very famous pasuk. We're Parsha Shmini. Very famous pasuk, and that is the story of the death of Nadav and Avihu, also known as the children of Aharon. In other words, sometimes people say, you know, the death of Bnei Aharon, rather than the death of Nadav and Avihu. They're the same people, but they're identified differently. But we're going to take a look at that story, and in particular, the very famous recounting of Aharon's reaction, response, to that event, to that occurrence. And in doing so, hopefully to bring out some insight from that story. Okay, so let's start with the bottom of page 590, the bottom of page 590. And in the middle of Parsha Shmini. Okay, so let's pick it up from Perek Tes, Pasuk Chaf Beis.
What's that in American?
That would be 922. Okay. Vayisa Aaron es yadav el ha'am vayivarchem. They're going through the whole ritual here of the Mishkan, and Aaron raises his hands toward the people and he blesses them, and he said, "Vayered me'asos achatas v'olav ashlamim, vayavo Moshe Aaron el ohel moed," and Moshe and Aaron come to the ohel moed, and they went out and they blessed the people, and the glory of Hashem appeared to the entire people. Vateitzayesh melifnei Hashem, and a fire came out from God. Vatochal al hamizbeach esaolah, and it consumed the carbon which was on the altar, and the people saw, vayar kolam vayaronu vayiplu al pneihem, the people saw, they sang, they cried out in joy, and they fell on their face. And now, we get to the Bnei Aharon. Vayikhu Bnei Aharon, the sons of Aharon, Nadav and Avihu, each took his fire pan, vayitnu bahen esh, vayasimu ala ketores, they prepared an incense offering, vayakrivu lifnei Hashem esh zara, and they brought before God a strange fire, asher lo tziva osam, that he did not command them. So we could have the whole shiur today just on this pasuk, about the esh zara, what was precisely the infraction, the avera, that Nadav and Avihu did, that warranted any type of punishing response from Hashem. The simple read of the pasuk is that they brought an esh zara, a strange fire, defined as asher lo tziva osam, that God had not commanded. They did some type of creative ritual. In other words, they brought a carbon, which was not part of the ritual command. And as a consequence, instead of a fire coming out and consuming the carbon, a divine fire emerges and consumes them via musu lefnei Hashem. So we're not going to talk about what they did and the nature of their infraction, the nature of their sinful activity. There's a lot to discuss about that. But what we're going to focus in is Aaron's response. Vayomer Moshe el Aaron. And Moshe comes to Aaron and he says to him, "Hu asher diber Hashem lemor." This is precisely what Hashem said. namely, Bikrovaya Kadesh Val Pnei Kol Ha'am Ekaved. I will be sanctified through those who are nearest to me, thus I will be honored before the entire people. In other words, that somehow the death of Nadav and Avihu in this context is somehow bringing kavod, honor, glory, renown, is somehow redounding well upon Shem Hashem. And that's another shir that we can give. What exactly is this Bekrovaya Kadesh Ve'al Pnei Kol Ha'am Ekaved? So what exactly is that? How is the consequence relevant to the act? Is it a reward? Is it a sin? Is it a punishment? That's another shir. But that's not today either. What we're going to focus in on is the next couple of words. Literally, couple of words. Vayidom Aharon. And Aharon is silent. So let's just imagine the scene for a moment, right? Nadav and Avihu die, and you know, clearly as an act of God. And Moshe comes to him and says, this is exactly what Hashem said. I will be sanctified through those who are nearest to me, and I will be honored before the entire people. And Aharon was silent. Aharon was silent. So that's the topic of today's shir, Aharon's silence. Okay, our own silence. So, how do you at first blush, first glance, how do you understand Aharon's response? What is the nature? In other words, the Torah is telling us, it's not simply about Moshe telling Aharon about the nature of what just happened, or about the fact that it just happened, but it is also about Aharon's response. So the fact that Aharon responded with silence is meant to draw our attention and bespeak some type of message for the reader. And the question is, how do we understand what he did? And then later on, we'll get to what perhaps is the message to draw from it. So let's start just on a simple level. What is the meaning of Aharon's response? Why did he... how would you imagine, how would you read the next pasuk? And, the kids died. Moshe comes and tells them, by the way, this is all part of God's, this is all part of what God had expected, that he would be glorified through this. And Aharon, what would you expect the next pasuk to say?
Right? He should be screaming.
Right. So you would expect, in other words, if we didn't know the next pasuk, we would expect to see an Aharon scream. Maybe he would scream, what's going on? Maybe he would scream just in agony. Maybe he would scream, Moshe, that's really nice, but not now. God forbid, there's tragedy to report. The first thing is, this is Lahavdil, and I say this tongue-in-cheek, really, but Lahavdil, it almost sounds like a very poor Shiva call, right? I'm sure we've all been to Shiva houses where you're sitting next to somebody who says something so inappropriate to the, to the Avil, and you just sort of cringe, in your seat. Somebody sent around, there was a viral YouTube video going around a few years ago about things not to say in a Shiva house. And it was so cringeworthy, it was hysterically funny and tragic all at the same time. So it's almost like, it almost sounds like a bad Shiva call. The first thing out of Moshe's mouth is, this is all, making God look good. Okay, so this is what we would have expected Aharon to do, somehow cry out in some reaction. But instead, his response is Vayidom Aharon, that Aharon is silent. So how do we understand that? Yeah.
Maybe Aharon thought that the children were sinning, and he is acknowledging Hashem's punishment as the right thing to do.
Okay. So what's the American phrase? Silence is acquiescence, or something like that. Not silence is golden. That when you're quiet, you're basically agreeing to the right. Shtika kohoda. But there's an English expression. But shtika kohoda. That so what you're suggesting is that the silence is
acceptance.
A what?
Acceptance?
Well, no. I think what you were saying was admission.
Right.
Which is a little different than acceptance. All right. Admission of what? What's it admitting to?
Every sin that the children were doing, whatever it was.
Right. Whatever the bad thing was, it's sort of admitting that this was a sin. Okay, now you're saying something slightly different. You said acceptance. What acceptance of what?
Acceptance. Well, it's does the crime fit the punishment? And I don't see it.
Right, but you're saying that Aaron's silence is he's accepting that the crime fit the punishment, even though you don't see it?
I don't see it that he accepts the punishment to the crime. That's why he's silent.
Oh, okay. He's silent because he does not accept. In other words, he thinks that it is...
The punishment is too much for what...
Right. Okay, so the silence here is... how could we say that? That the silence is a silent protest.
It's actually a scream, silent scream.
Okay, all right, I'll say it, a silent scream. Silent scream. Or maybe a silent protest. There's power in the silent protest also, right? Yeah, Norm?
It could be just dumbfounded.
Okay, so that's what you wanted to say?
I was going to say shock.
Okay, so shock. I think that goes together, right? So he's shocked into silence. Shocked, dumbfounded. Right. But what's he shocked about? He's shocked about just the tragedy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think this isn't the right answer, this is my answer. Something happens and you don't even understand what just happened.
Right, you don't even understand what's happening. Right, just.
And Moshe could be blah blah blind. It
you can't even hear like.
Can't even hear what Moshe said.
Right, it's just in a fog.
Right.
In a fog. Okay. Yeah, Morty.
The word perplexed. He's perplexed to the extent that he says, "This is the way it's supposed to be," and all of a sudden Moshe's coming to me, and he's saying, "This was God's accepting what was happening." And he may not understand what's going on.
Okay, so I'll put that somewhere between these two, that there's a confusion, somewhere between silent protest and shock and dumbfounded, there's some level of confusion. Okay, so silence maybe is an admission to the sin of the children, maybe it's a silent scream or protest. Maybe it's a confusion, shock, dumbfounded as to what was going on. Anybody else?
Some
yeah.
People internalize their grief. Some people cry out loud, and some people it's in the kitchens.
Right. So another the silence is a sadness or any.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Put that over here. Okay. So the silence is not exactly a protest, but. But I put it in this line over here because the silence over here is one in three are two different type of silences. I put this like in one bucket. Either the silence is saying that I'm upset or sad, or the silence is saying that I protest, or the silence is saying that I disagree. But this silence in the middle bucket here is a silence that is speaking something to the issue, rather than a silent acceptance. Or just being shocked and dumbfounded.
The only question is that
Moshe even understood what's happening. Okay, so we're going to leave Moshe aside for a moment, because as I said, the Moshe's thing is a whole other shiur. Yeah.
But Aaron could also be reacting to his close brother Moshe, telling him this at this moment in his life. His silence is a silence to what Moshe has said. Moshe, his brother, his loving brother, this is what you said before. This is a time, where is your outpouring of grief? Where is your sadness? He was their uncle, another one of your uncle. Where was his great sadness at the tragedy of the fact that Aaron's two sons are now dead and will not come back anymore.
So his silence is sort of a rebuke to Moshe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I think we'll put that over here also. Again, as whether the silent scream or protest is to Hashem or to Moshe. I think we can put that over here.
Okay. Anybody else? Yeah. So we have a gamut of possibilities of what the silence is. I also want to point out, what is the word in Hebrew for silence or to be quiet? Sheket, right? So sheket would be quiet. To be quiet is lishtok. It's not exactly the same word, although it's probably connected. In the etymology, this is because it sounds so alike. So sheket means quiet, but
lishtok is completely different. That's not to talk. It's like a commandment.
Well, right. So if a person lishtok means to be quiet, right? So if you wanted to say that Aaron was quiet, that he didn't cry out, you would say vayish. What would be the conjugation? Vayishtok, right? Vayishtok Aharon. Aaron was quiet, but actually the word that the pasuk uses is not vayishtok Aharon, but what's the language? Vayidom Aharon. So instead of, I'm going to put it over here, the actual word is Vayidom. Vayidom Aharon, rather than Vayishtok. Right? So it would be Vayishtok. That's what we could have expected. And it's a pretty common, I think, I didn't check in the concordance to see exactly how many times the word shtika comes up in its various forms in the Bible, but I think that's a sort of a common word, and vayidom is not that common. Is not that common. So what is the vayidom mean? And even if they are of equal commonality, you still have to ask the question, if they are synonyms of some sort, they're not the same word. So what is why does the Torah choose vayidom versus Vayishtok? What does Vayidom actually mean? So we're going to try to answer sort of both of these questions. Why was he silent, or the meaning of Aaron's silence? And then the second question of Vayishtok versus Vayidom, why the Torah uses the term Vayidom. So let's start with the handouts that you have. If anybody has an extra handout there to give Marjorie. Okay. 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 So let's start with Rashi. Rashi says, "Vayidom Aaron kibel sachar al shtikaso," that Aaron was rewarded for his silence. Uma sachar kibel? What is the schar that he received? What's the reward? Shenis yached imo hadibor, that God spoke with Aharon uniquely, intimately, privately, when he gave the commandments regarding Shenemra lo levado parsha shesuya yayin, when he spoke to him about the laws of wine intoxication in the mikdash. So Rashi says, gives an overarching answer. He doesn't say exactly what does his silence mean, but Rashi says that his silence was rewarded. Okay, so if his silence was rewarded, which one of these possibilities on the board is most likely what Rashi is assuming? Why was he silent? Would Aaron be rewarded for a silent scream of protest?
No.
I mean, I guess maybe, because that would be better than a
Controlled himself.
Right. So maybe it would be that he controlled himself, right? But perhaps we'll put one more over here. Not just an admission of sin of the children, but the last sentence, which Paul said, an admission of sin of the children and Hashem's response, like the justice of the response, and that is a hard nut to swallow. Right? It's a hard nut to swallow. I don't mean that it's a hard nut to swallow that that's a possible interpretation. But for somebody to experience tragedy, and then after that tragedy, to get up and say, and mean it, Yiskadal v'yiskadash shemei rabah, that God is just, that's a hard thing to do. It's easier to do when you don't really understand Aramaic, and the person just says, Yiskadal v'yiskadash shemei rabah, and... But if we really understand the meaning of Kaddish, it's a hard thing to do. And that's why it's such a big deal, Kaddish, because Kaddish is a statement of accepting God's justice in the world in the face of terrible tragedy. And technically speaking, Kaddish is not for, God forbid, the tragedy of a loss of a spouse or even of a sibling. Technically speaking, Kaddish is recited by a child for a parent. That is the... I was going to say maybe the deepest tragedy, but maybe the worst one is parent for a child. But in the sort of the normal scheme of things, where people die, you know, Baruch Hashem, children usually don't precede parents. But that would be worse. But when a child, you know, between a child saying Kaddish for a parent, or a sister, or a brother, a sibling, or a spouse. It is the deepest pain, I think, is a child, you know, for a parent versus a sibling or even a spouse. You know, people, you know, when they're in wartime and you know, I don't think that, you know, they cry out for their sibling. They cry out, you know, mommy. You know, when they're in pain and suffering. You know, so there's a very, very deep connection. So the pain and suffering is even more so in our situation here, which is the parent for a child. So when it comes to Kaddish, I'm making the point that Kaddish is really a statement of God's justice in the world. So Rashi says, and it's based on a Medrash, that that he was silent and he was rewarded for it, and the underpinning behind it is really an acceptance of God's justice. And that is a huge, huge, huge thing, which is worthy of some type of divine reward. Because really, how can one even you know, sort of begin to wrap their heads around that? Karen, you want to say something?
I was going to say that when the loss of a parent, there's a we have an acceptance. We grow up with an acceptance that we will not.
Right, the sort of natural order of things.
Particularly, it's the when we consider timely.
Right.
It's not, no suffering, or 120.
Right.
Accepted, but untimely, and in this case,
right.
In the wrong order.
Right.
In the wrong order. Right. That's a whole different
right.
Kind of animal.
Right.
Now, we say, you know, when you get a beginning of a death, and there's a tradition to say, but I am a man.
Right.
One always yells at me, he doesn't always accept that. It's a
not easy.
That's a very hard thing to say.
Right. Right, for sure. And so so if you assume that it's some type of admission of justice in a situation, right, that the children sin, there is some type of admission of what's going on here, it's a big deal. It's worthy of a schar. So, yeah. What do you want to say?
Yeah, could this, I don't know, maybe it's from left field, but could it be like he may have felt that this is retribution for his sin that with the ego, and he may have felt that because of this sin, his sons were killed, and God now is giving him the slicha. I always considered that what Aaron did was something unusual and it was negative. So
it was negative.
It was negative, yes.
Right.
And so somewhere down the line, he needed to be, you know, punished for it.
You mean what Aaron did by the Egel?
Right.
Right. Okay, I hear what you're saying. It's you know, without some sort of like explicit statement in the text, I would be a little hard pressed to go down that route, because it sort of supposes that the tragedy of the death of the children is Aaron's tragedy, and while he is the survivor of the tragedy, to say that his children are killed because of his avera makes their tragedy, you know, it makes it gets into a broader issue of, you know, divine justice. So I would be a little reticent to go down that that particular path. Norm.
Getting back to the silent scream of protest,
yeah,
about it. What Karen mentioned, Baruch Dayan Emmet, would you ever say that to a parent who lost a child? I can imagine that giving you a good punch in the nose.
Right. Right. So I'm not sure that Baruch Dayan Emmet is a statement for somebody to say to a mourner. It's a person to, a statement that a person says, you know, perhaps, you know, to themselves or independent of the, you know, of the mourner when they hear such.
Telling it to Aaron.
Oh, right. So you're saying that Aaron's. So you're saying Moshe's statement is like a Baruch Dayan Emmet.
Right.
So that's why I'm saying today's shiur is not about Moshe, right? I want to keep it on Aaron's response.
Aaron.
Yeah.
Because Aaron contains himself.
Oh, right. So you're saying that he controls himself.
Yeah.
He controls himself in the face of, rather than punching punching Moshe in the nose. You know, he's either a silent protest or a silent acquiescence. Yeah.
I want to understand how this is a reward for Aaron, especially given his state of mind. He received a reward for his silence, and what was the reward?
That he had personal divine communion with God. That's big. what the divine communion is about, that's, again, also another shear. Right?
Because it seemed to me that what it was about is in a way similar to what Aaron was going through. There was a state of mind that Aaron is in now, having just heard that his sons were killed. And for somebody who's intoxicated by wine, a Kohen who's intoxicated by wine, cannot do the malacha, cannot do his thing.
Right.
And he too, someone who's in an intoxicated state, is also not in his regular state of mind. So I'm just trying to make a comparison that different states of mind that are sort of unnatural or irregular, maybe there's a connection there. Maybe this is why Hashem chose this specific piece to talk to Aaron.
Okay, so it's really outside the scope of our share, but I'm just going to say two very, very brief points on that. That God rewarded him with his divine communion, and he tells him about, you know, the laws of Shtuya Yayin, and perhaps what you could, how you could understand this, is that, you know, a lot of times people don't death seems arbitrary and nonsensical. And what?
And harsh.
And harsh. You know, at least, you know, a person that, you know, in Pittsburgh, I think they said that some of the victims were survivors of the Shoah. Is that correct?
Yes.
Right. One person was a survivor. So you could say, you know, this person, you know, survived, you know, Hitler. And you know, now just like a crazy guy just shows up and shows, like, you know, he survived the worst tragedy, and now this sort of nonsensical, just haphazard, way that he dies. If there's at least some meaning behind it, you know, guy dies in war, fighting for a cause, okay, not that it's good, but there is some measure of maybe closure or acceptance that although we're sad, but we can have some solace to it. So maybe that's what his reward was. If you assume that it was he was a silence of acquiescence to the justice of God, and God said, "My reward to you is I'm going to explain to you. I'm going to give you the I'm going to explain to you the reason behind the death. Most people don't get that. I'm going to give that to you." And he talks to him about Shtuya Yayin and what it is about and what it is and why it. And so he goes and gives him the reason, he gives him the why behind the whole, the what, which is a gift that most people don't really get. So that's one way of looking at why the communion was particularly around this. The other way of looking around the communion is that the communion is the reward, and the fact that he got this makes, it's around, you know, drunkenness in the Mishkan, makes Aharon is particularly to Aaron, because he is now a much more powerful vehicle to express the severity and significance of this mitzvah, because he personally has experienced the consequence of it. So he becomes sort of the poster child, as it were, for it. Okay, but that's outside of our topic. Okay, so I think what Norm is saying is a lot of validity to it. It's really, he was kovish as yetzer. So either admission of sin, admission of the sin, admission of the justice, or restraining himself. Okay, let's take a look at the Sforno. The Sforno says, "Vayidom Aharon shehisnachem b'kiddush Hashem shenikadesh b'mosam," that he consoled himself after having been told that the death of his sons represented a sanctification of the name of God. So again, this is about Aharon sort of accepting that. Well, actually, it's sort of the Sforno is a middle category here. It's not an admission of the justice, but whether he admits to the justice or not, he sees like a silver lining here. That Moshe tells him that there's a great Kiddush Hashem that occurred over here, because now people see that there really is a God and there are consequences, and they were the vehicle for showing God's involvement, presence in the world, and that was enough to create a sense of consolation. So he was consoled. He was consoled by what Moshe said, even though, like Norm says, he could equally have gone around and felt like he wanted to punch him in the nose, and he steeled himself against that. The Sforno says that he heard what Moshe said, and it was actually a consoling factor. And I think there's an important lesson to learn here, which is that you never really know what is going to be a consoling statement for one person, or going to be enraging, really, for another. And that's why it is in the house of an Avel that you're not really supposed to initiate conversation with the Avel. You're supposed to listen and take your cues from the Avel and try to reflect back to them, as best you can, where they are. Because one statement could equally be a statement of consolation for an Aaron, and maybe for somebody else, that would be extraordinarily painful. So the key is to listen. The key is to hear. And then one knows how to, how best to respond. The Ramban says on the bottom of the first page, the Ramban says, it's a pretty long Ramban. I just excerpted the last line of the Ramban. The Ramban says, V'hinei amar Moshe ha-mikra hazeh asher gazar, turn the page, Hashem, lemor elibo b'kravai kadesh shelo yeharsu al kedusha si, va'al pnei kol ha'ame kavech yu noagim kavod v'mishkani. Here's the key line. V'ta'am. The reason, v'ta'am v'yidom Aharon, the reason that Aaron was silent was shehaya boche b'kol b'az shosak. It wasn't that he was silent in the face of the tragedy. He cried like a baby. He was bawling. He was crying. He was crying loudly. Boche b'kol b'az shosak. And then he fell silent. And they bring a proof text to this type of behavior from the pasuk in Eicha, va'al tidom bat einecha. The point of the matter is that Aaron, and maybe this is similar, maybe it was consoled, but the point of the matter is that he was crying terribly. This is not a person who was, usually when I ask this question, somebody usually says, he had no feelings, not no feelings that he was numb, but how unfeeling can one be that they're not even going to cry at the death of their own children, as religious as they are, still be a human being, right? Cry and then say, accept it. So and this is, I think, what the Ramban is pointing out, that Aaron was not some supernatural being that had no emotions and no feelings. He cried, Bikol, the Az Shasak. Right? So in other words, there is a sense of the human experience You know, there's a tragedy. And even if the person can then go on and say Yiskadal v'Yiskadash afterwards, that I accept the just, that there is justice in the world, that there's a God in the world, and even if I don't understand it, I accept it, that it must somehow be just in the divine, conception of reality. But it starts with a cry. It would be almost inhuman not to cry. Shahaya boche bekol be'az shasak. Right? And he cried first, and then he was silent. Vayidom Aaron means that he wasn't just quiet, but that he cried and then he was quiet, and that gives us a little bit of insight both into Aaron and also into the nature of dealing with tragedy. For a person, you know, their level, right? I think in psychology, Judy, you'll tell me if this is right. Right, in psychology, there's first a denial and then anger and then there's certain stages.
There's stages, although now they're saying there really aren't stages. You go through all of them.
Okay, well, when they used to say when there were stages, right? So there's stages, and maybe before acceptance, you have to go through through the emotional release. If a person doesn't experience the pain, then it's almost like the acceptance isn't real, because it's almost being an automaton. So that if we assume that Aaron indeed accepted this, right, or was even consoled by it, or whatever it is, it's not because he was a non-feeling automaton. It wasn't that he was a religious being that had a lobotomy of the part of the brain that controls emotions, but with his emotions. And with the depth of the sadness and the tragedy, he was still able to get to Vayidom Aaron. And that makes his silence even more powerful. Because if you would say that he just didn't feel the pain, he just went straight to acceptance, that maybe that's a big deal also. But maybe it's a little creepy, right? Perhaps. But it's even more powerful that he felt the depth of the emotion, and he still gets to acceptance. That's a powerful statement. Yeah.
They translated as follows: and Aaron held his peace.
And Aaron held his peace.
So
okay.
It sounds like
it's almost more like Norm was saying. That he wanted to, maybe not exactly, but in other words, he had a lot to express,
right.
and he held his peace.
That's
right. Okay, that's interesting. I mean, just trying to think if that's like an accurate translation or if that's interpretation a little bit. To hold his peace, Yidom Aharon. Not sure. But either way, it's a good point. It's a good point. Somebody have their hand raised? You want to say something? Okay. So let's go a little further here. The Vilna Gaon, take a look here. The next source on your sheet on 1 second. Yeah. Okay, so second. All right, we're going to skip that. Okay. So we spoke about the possibilities of what of Aaron's response. Whether it was admission or consolation, maybe. He was holding himself back. And maybe it was just like the simple pshat, just sort of shock and being dumbfounded. Take a look here at the best way to try to do first. Okay, let's do the following. Let's skip. We're going to come back to this in a minute. Let's go to page 5. Okay. Okay, page 5 here we have the Kitzer the Balaturim, just on the top of the page. It's a few short lines there on the top of the page, on page 5. And the Balaturim says that this language of Vayidom Aharon is rather unique, and it comes up one other time in Tanakh. And that other time in Tanakh, Vayidom Aharon, Vayidom HaShemesh. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the story in Yehoshua, when Yehoshua was... anybody know the story?
He stops the sun.
So the Balaturim says there's a connection here to be drawn. Vayidom Aharon. Aharon was silent. Vayidom means not simply that he was silent. Vayidom means being still. Maybe that's where Hertz is coming from, that he held his peace. I'm not sure. But Vayidom means to be still. In fact, in some rabbinic literature, Kabbalistic literature, we refer to various expressions of life. Achai, the medaber is a human being who speaks and communicates in sophisticated ways. You have living beings, you have animal beings, you have plant life, and then you have a domeim, right? A domeim is like a rock. You know, it exists in the world, but you know, it doesn't move, it doesn't talk, it just sort of sits. So Vayidom means it was still. Vayidom Aharon, just like Vayidom HaShemesh, the sun was still in the sky when Yehoshua was leading the people in conquest and he needed a little bit extra time and he called out a miracle and Hashem responded and the sun was still in the sky, allowed him a little bit more time to finish the battle. And the Balaturim suggests that the connection here is remez. It's a hint, a metaphor, if you will, to a reminder of the following teaching. Lamasha Amru, the rabbis taught, Me'oros Lokin, that the luminaries of the sky, the sun and the moon, go into eclipse. Al-Av Bezdin Shemes, when a Av Bezdin, the head of the Sanhedrin, the head of the Bezdin, dies. And when that happens, the light is diminished. Ubnei Aaron hayu Av Bezdin. The children of Aaron were like the equivalent of an Av Bezdin, the head of a rabbinic, the Sanhedrin, the head of a rabbinic court. Why does it say Vayidom Aaron? Vayidom Aaron reminds us of Vayidom HaShemesh. He was still, like the sun was still. And this sort of reminds us of the fact that these two people who died, even though they apparently deserved to do so, they were great tzaddikim, and light was perhaps diminished in the world as a consequence of their death. Now go back to where I was with you a moment ago, on page 3. Right, page 3. Right. Top of page 3. I was on the bottom of page 2 with you, so we're going a little. Take a look at the top of page 3. Tanu Rabbanan, Tafresh. Tanu Rabbanan. Bishvil arba dvarim. The Gemara in Sukkah says that there are four reasons that the sun is loke. That the sun is smitten. In other words, that the light of the sun is minimized, right? It is eclipsed. For four reasons, the sun is punished. Al-Av Bezdin, or its light is diminished. Al-Av Bezdin Shemes, when the head of the Bezdin dies. But that's not the whole quote. Read the next few words. Al-Av Bezdin Shemes ve'eno nispad kehalacha. And he's not eulogized properly. It's not the death of the salesman. It is when the salesman is not appropriately eulogized afterwards. Ve'eno nispad kehalacha. There's another example. Al na'ara hamu'urasa shetza'aka bi'ir, a betrothed maiden who screams in the city when she is being raped. Ve'ein moshi'ala, no one comes out to help. That is a cause for chama loke, for the sun being diminished. The Al-Mishkav Zachor, on homosexual sex, that's another reason. The Al-Shnei Achin Shenishbach Daman Ke'echad, and two brothers whose blood is spilled at the same time. These are all either moral, you know, morally reprehensible activities, or tragedies. So, and in this list is Beis Din, Av Beis Din Eino Nispad Kehalacha, that the Av Beis Din dies and nobody really cares. So, since we're running out of time, I'm going to just sort of leave you with that to think about, but let's sort of bring it back to us. So what's Vayidom Aharon? So the Baal HaTorim said is to remind us of the sun, and but I think it's a little different. Vayidom Aharon, when the sun is diminished, it's diminished because somebody great died and nobody noticed. Vayidom Aharon is like when the sun stood still. Vayidom Aharon, I would suggest, is taking great notice of the people who died. Not that this was a silent eulogy, if you will, right? His silent protest or silent some type of silent statement here. So I would say that Vayidom Aharon is perhaps a silent statement of the extraordinary loss that is being felt here. Right? When God stops the sun, in Joshua's time, it's in order to, that's a miracle. That's not a bad thing. It is a miracle for the Jewish people to help them engage in conquest. But now I want to take it to the final. Yeah.
Well, it's the earth that really stops, and it's the sun that appears to have stopped.
Okay.
And you don't know what's going to happen at that point, right? What's going to happen? And maybe it shows Aaron.
But why, why do you say it's the sun, the earth that stops?
Because the earth revolves around the sun. So the sun's not stopping.
Maybe the earth stopped turning. So it didn't
Yeah, okay.
Stop. Oh, you mean the earth stopped spinning?
Right.
Okay.
So. So it's Aaron that's in this state of stoppage. Maybe confusion. Maybe how do I respond to this?
Right.
How do I respond to this? What's going to happen? How to respond?
Right. Okay. So in other words, if you think about it from a scientific perspective, it's the Earth that would have had to have stopped
right.
in order for the sun to not have set.
Yeah.
To have stayed.
Didn't fall off of the Earth.
What? Right. Okay. So and Aharon is playing the role of the earth, stopped in its tracks,
right?
And so Aharon is seized, right? He's seized by the tragedy or by... So the language of Vayidom, of being sort of being still, is, I think, indicates more that, you know, a silent scream of some sort, rather than an admission of the justice of the situation. Lishtok would be he was quiet, he admitted this is what it is. But being still I think that the pasuk is indicating, and especially if you connect it to the story of the sun, the only other time in Tanakh where we have this language of the sun stopping still in its tracks, it sounds like the natural course of events should be, you know, to cry out like the Ramban said, or maybe like some of the other suggestions that you all had. But he stood still. He's holding back. He maybe held his peace, right? Rather than express really what would be naturally, you know, coming forward. And that's a big deal. Yeah.
And how could Aaron exceed this as justice? Maybe in God's realm, it's justice. But a parent could never see that as justice.
Right. Well, I want to, when we talk about things of this nature, I always like to distinguish between the psychological experience of the event and theology. So sometimes if a person really believes, you know, not just sort of pays lip service or intellectually understands that there might be divine justice, but really has emunah and bitachon that there is divine justice, that it is divinely just, even if it's beyond my comprehension, the theological belief can have impact on the psychological experience. But one second. But I think for that's like really a level of tzidkus that most people are not on, right? That is a level of righteous piety that most people, there is some type of disconnect between the psychological reality and the theological belief. And when those two are absolutely in sync, then the theological belief can impact the psychological experience. When those are out of sync, as I think it is, because most people spend their lives working on their sense of belief in God in the face of various challenges and tragedies, so I just don't want to confuse the two. So you're right. I mean, how could a parent see that as divinely just? So I think for most situations it would be very hard to do that. But if we really take the emunah and bitachon seriously and believe that there is divine justice, then theoretically a person could see it as just, and maybe Aaron did accept it as just, not just pay sort of lip service. And I don't mean that in a critical or judgmental way. I'm saying it descriptively that's the reality of life. That's just the reality. Yeah.
The wording actually suggests if you make a connection with the Vayidom Shemesh, something unnatural happened.
Right.
So his response
is also unnatural. In other words, it's so superhuman. It's an unnatural. Right. Most people would not be able to do this for sure. And most people, would probably fit into that. And then the question is whether a person is going to ultimately sort of at least outwardly, accept it or say that it's just, but have to hold back. That's, I think, where most people experientially are. All right. Let me give you the final thought here on this connection to Vayidom. To the story in Yahushua. So I think that there are three things that you can get from this connection to the story in Yahushua. Does anybody else have a thought about this very unique word, Vayidom, and the Baal HaTerem saying it's connected to the story in Yahushua, the sun stopping? Anybody else have any thoughts about why the Torah would be, what that connection might be? So let me share with you a couple of brief thoughts. Number one is that, like I told you before, maybe it's the silence is a great eulogy. Number two is that when Yahushua asked for the sun to stop, he needed it to stop so he could finish his business there with Givon. When Aaron stops here, when he's silent, maybe it's not about admitting or any of this. He needs time to be able to process what's going on. Vayidom Aaron is like Vayidom HaShemesh. The sun stops in order to be able to do what has to be done. And he stops here. He's not saying anything. Maybe this is the shock and dumbfound, just to be able to give time to process what has happened. And then to come to an appropriate response. And maybe their appropriate response is not to punch Moshe in the nose. And maybe their appropriate response is to scream. And maybe the appropriate response is ultimately to acceptance. But whatever that appropriate response is, need time to process. Vayidom Aaron is about standing still just as the sun stood still in order to give Yahushua time to be able to get the job done. This is to be able to give Aaron time to be able to do the right thing, to be able to get to the right place in order to process what has happened. But there is a even deeper level, and with this I'll conclude, even though we didn't get to everything in the booklet here. But with this I'll conclude, and I saw this, I've quoted him over the last many months, different times, Rabbi David Kasher. He says, the Baal HaTerem connects us to Vayidom Aaron, Vayidom HaShemesh. But there's another dome in the Torah that is worth in the Tanakh that is worth connecting to, and that is the Kol Dimama Daka, right? That God, that Eliyahu hears Hashem, not in the wind, not in the fire, not in the grand sounds, but in the small, still voice. In the wind, the small, still voice is heard. Kol Dimama Daka. Kol Dimama Daka. Dimama from the Lashon Dom. Not exactly the same word, but close enough. The same, perhaps the same Shoresh. They are connected, the Dalet Mem. And the idea of a small, still voice, of a quiet voice, that there he was able to hear God. Not in the grand fires, not in the big sounds, not in the Har Sinai experiences, although those can also, but Bekol Demama Daka. So get this. Aaron, has this terrible tragedy. Now, there are two ways that people sort of experience God in life. You have the Mazel Tov moments, right? And then you have the Baruch Dayan Emes moments. And intuitively, I think we would say, took a vote here, where is it easier to see God? In the Mazel Tov moments or the Baruch Dayan Emes moments? So, by show of hands, Mazel Tovs? At least one, two, three, four, okay?
No, for me it's going to be the other way around.
So, okay. But for some people, it's actually, and maybe this is counterintuitive, it's actually in moments of tragedy. And let me tell you where I think we can all experience this, or maybe all have experienced it. If you're retired, you may remember when you were working, and if you're still working, you know, it's much easier to take off for a shiva than it is to go on a vacation. People that work and that are committed to their jobs will find it very, very hard, to take vacation time. And people do, especially in our society today, where, you know, even though you're allowed to take off, and if you don't take, but then you take off and you take your cell phone with you so that you're constantly in contact with the office. And if not, then even though technically you were given that time, you know, your boss might look for somebody else. Right. That, you know, expect you to call. Right. It's not so easy in the corporate environment just to take a vacation. But and people, I think, struggle with it. You know, read popular essays and popular magazines about the need for people to take vacation, even if it just means, I don't mean going to Hawaii, even if it just means not going to work for a day and getting up a little late and sipping a cup of coffee in the privacy of your kitchen while reading whatever newspaper you find pleasurable. That's also a vacation. Or just walking around the block in the middle of the afternoon, not having to do anything. That's a vacation too. But people find that very difficult, especially in the connected world in which we live, that you have to constantly be in contact. And if you don't respond to a person's WhatsApp or email or text within 10 seconds, you're somehow, derelict in your duties. Right? But taking off for Shiva, even in the society in which we live, I don't think people have a problem. Because when tragedy hits, it focuses our minds in a certain way that the good times don't. Let's say it another way, right? When, in normal daily life, I argue with you, I fight with you, I'm insulted, you're insulted, whatever happens. But somehow, when tragedy hits, all that stuff becomes kleinigkeit. It becomes not important. And we all of a sudden realize the things that are truly important. And the fact that you and I might have been in a tiff, it all of a sudden, the tragedy helps us to sort of focus our minds on the things that are truly important. A friend of mine went to visit a woman who was running a significant charity. And she was dying, I don't know, of cancer. I'm not exactly sure. And he saw her about a week or two before she died. She's a young woman in her maybe early 40s. And she said, I have no wisdom to offer in these final moments of my life except one thing. you know, I wish I wouldn't have taken things as seriously as I did. In other words, the small things, like don't sweat the small things. There's so many small things in life that are really objectively small, but in the normal course of life, you know, we give them importance more than do. But when tragedy hits, it's sort of like gives us the clarity of mind to be able to see what's real and what's not, what's significant and what's immaterial. And this is perhaps Vayidom Aharon, Kol Demama Daka. As hard as it is, Norm, to say that Aharon could potentially have accepted the justice of this situation or seen anything positive or consolation or anything positive, sometimes very counterintuitively, when tragedy hits, a person has the capability to have the most divine experience, to see the essential presence of God in the world where we are incapable or less capable of doing so in the normal course of daily living, where we are blinded by the or by all the robust colors and vibrancy of life. But as you said, Norm, a few weeks ago, in you know, undermining my entire shiur, that black and white you can actually has much more nuance than color. And when tragedy, God forbid, hits, sometimes we're able to see things black and white. We are able to see the much more clarity than when we have all the colors and vibrancy of life. And maybe that's the Vayidom Aharon, that when Aharon was silent, he was silent, and he was rewarded for that according to Rashi. And maybe it's because in that tragedy, as a consequence of that tragedy, as awful as the tragedy was, maybe he was able to focus his own mind to be able to see the divinity within this very tragic experience and maybe in life in general. The Kol Demama Daka. We don't always see the Kol Demama Daka in regular life, but unfortunately when tragedy hits, we are sometimes able to see it a little bit more powerfully. So, to conclude, why was Aharon silent? Maybe it's admission of of the children, admission of the justice. Maybe he was consoled by what Moshe said. Maybe he just wanted to scream, but he was holding it back. Like the Ramban said, he cried, and then he withheld. Maybe he was just shocked and being dumbfounded. And maybe it gets, and maybe the answer to it is rooted in this very unique word, Vayidom Aharon, and that word is connected to the story in Yehoshua. And from the various ideas that we drew out from the story of Yehoshua, maybe that explains to us why he was silent in the, at that moment. Okay, we'll pause here. And we're...
Iyov?
Iyov?
Iyov, right?